Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. September 27, 2019. Thrive Global published my new article, How to Rise Above Time, Space and Motion and Communicate with the Dead. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, if we were to develop like nature and its laws, and aspire to a more advanced human state, we would need no such technological means. We would experience a more perfect reality than any technological development that a narrow human brain can ever imagine. AI technology is taking a turn to help us communicate with the dead. The Hereafter Startup offers AI learning so that you can continue holding conversations with your loved ones after they pass away. Instead of settling for stories based on memories of your loved ones, Hereafter offers to learn their speech and behaviors with AI technology, so that you can stay in touch with them after they pass away. This is yet another example of how we keep advancing technologically, but fail to advance internally, in our attitudes toward people, the world and nature. If we would be more mentally and emotionally advanced, then we would see the need to communicate with our dead loved ones as simply childish and stemming from a lack of purpose in life. It is understandable that people seek feelings of warmth, support and protection, and that this technology can help provide those sensations, but such engagement contributes nothing to any positive human development. It's no different to the tendency today to have psychoactive drugs readily available, to hold us within bubbles of calmness. Society in general lacks purpose in life. What once would illuminate in front of us as a lofty goal worth working toward, has disappeared. In its absence, such developments together with the legalized drug tendency, which I see in the same line, emerge as temporary replacements. You don't need technology to communicate with the dead. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, if we were to develop like nature and its laws, and aspire to a more advanced human state, we would need no such technological means. We would experience a more perfect reality than any technological development that a narrow human brain can ever imagine. Who are Kabbalists? They are people who have attained a perception and sensation of reality as interconnected, above time, space and motion. Since they rise above time, space and motion, they can communicate with each other and with people from the near or distant past, regardless of whether they have made physical contact. It is neither an imaginary, illusory, mystic nor prophetic ability. It is, instead, a very real ability attainable with the Kabbalah methodology. By rising above time, space and motion in our perception and sensation, we gain access to the beginning and end of nature. We can then dress into any person who has ever lived, knowing what and how they thought and feeling what they felt, and by doing so, learn directly from them and use their advice. It is as Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag wrote in his article, "Spirituality is called that which will never be lost, from that extends what our sages say, who interpret the verses of the Torah. They say that this is what Abraham said to Isaac, and other similar sayings of our sages. They would say what is said, what is explained in the verses. The question arises, how did they know what one said to another? But, because those who reached the degree where Abraham, or anyone, stood, they see and know what Abraham saw and knew. For this reason they know what Abraham said. And likewise in all the sayings of our sages when they interpreted the verses of the Torah. All that was because they, too, attained the degree, and each degree in spirituality is a reality. Everyone sees the reality, as all those who come to the City of London in England see what is in the city and what is said in the city. How to rise above time, space and motion using Kabbalah. We each feel time, space and motion within the narrow framework of our subjective individual perception based on our inborn egoistic qualities. The wisdom of Kabbalah is a method for how to rise above our egoistic perception of reality through developing love toward others. By doing so, we reveal an eternal and perfect reality where everything and everyone are connected as one. Attaining reality in such a way means attaining a perception of nature that is unfiltered and undistorted, we come to feel how nature is a force of love and bestowal, which constantly acts to connect all parts of reality together as a single whole, and we align our approach to life with nature's laws and functionality. From this interconnected attainment of reality, we can then access the desires and thoughts of any individual who ever lived. It can be compared to how we currently use a search engine to pull information that we need from a virtual cloud. However, it's much more intensive than a mere search query, since we literally dress into the states of all kinds of people, from King Solomon to Hitler to people we never knew existed. Of course, this elated ability can only be granted to those who would use it completely altruistically, for the benefit of others and nature, without a shred of egoistic self-aimed benefit attached. That is nature's condition. It is why we need the wisdom of Kabbalah to rise above the ego in order to reach such an attitude to reality. Absolute connection to others and nature requires no sophisticated technologies. We need only work on our thoughts, desires and intentions, called inner work, according to the method of Kabbalah, and we then develop a whole new expansive perception and sensation of reality. Greta on Climate. From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, the 27th of September 2019. You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. Yet I am one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? Greta Thunberg in straightforward, direct style, stubborn, stutter-free tone. Greta Thunberg, the Swedish environmental activist, spoke at the United Nations Climate Change Conference, the global protest of young people against the neglect of the climate crisis. This girl, who suffered from depression at the age of 11 and stopped speaking, who was diagnosed as having Asperger's syndrome, obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, and selective mutism, is now a 16-year-old leading a global movement of youth against the neglect of the climate crisis. Greta's voice has become the voice of environmental activists around the world, and she has been able to drive more than 4 million people around the world to go out to the streets. But behind the moving naivety, many are using this opportunity to promote their own agendas. This is how things work in the egoistic world we live in. Everything is calculated, interest-based, and pays off to someone at the end of the day. And even the colorful plaque Greta held in the empty squares of world capitals is also part of the campaign. I have no claim against her or those behind her. Personally, I would have given her the Nobel Peace Prize, of which she is a candidate. After all, due to the positive messages generated from her green protest with a quarter of humanity, the world is beginning to agree that there is a serious problem here, that we can't escape the forces of nature, that global warming is a result of mankind's weakness, and that a great deal of the climate crisis is a direct and indirect consequence of humans. Thus, two types of nature become clear, the globally interconnected nature and the egotistically disconnected nature, with zero interaction between the two. Also, human connections affect the relationship between all parts of nature, which is why we must first and foremost align ourselves with the laws of nature. The entire ecosystem is integral, and the climate crisis plaguing humanity stems from human activity alone, from our attitude to the world. This is not the result of what things we do with our hands and legs, or what kind of food we put in our mouths. As long as our egoistic nature remains unrestrained and out of control, and no one in the UN really cares for the global ecological balance, except for the sake of appearance, we can say goodbye to planet Earth. The fundamental solution that will bring us to balance with nature is strengthening positive human connections over the increasingly growing ego. The negative influence of separation between us permeates all the still, vegetative and animate levels of nature. As written by Kabbalists, man is a small world, the world is a great man. Therefore, Dear Greta, the cure for treating the global phenomena begins our relationship with each other as human beings. If we genuinely cry together for social correction to happen, we will succeed. And in that, I am with you all the way. Blitz of Kabbalah Tips, March 10, 2019. Question. You talk about the education of a single European, a single person. What will be the basis for the upbringing of a new individual? Is Kabbalah the method that you propose? Where is the basis, the concept of your proposed path? Answer, you just need to open the books of the wisdom of Kabbalah where everything is written, and read them. Question, who is the creator? Something not from this world? So how can one induce him for anything? Answer, the creator is not from this world, that is correct and accurate. He is the highest power of bestowal and love. He can bestow to you only to the degree that you want to instill the properties of bestowal and love in you. If you want to acquire the attitude of love and bestowal toward others, then you must turn to the Creator. Question, what does the fulfillment of a desire mean? Answer, the fulfillment of a desire means getting what I want. In our state, all of our desires are egoistic, and therefore, we do not receive their fulfillment. Even if we do get fulfillment, we discover later that we have become even emptier. This teaches us not to want to be fulfilled egotistically. Question, could the Jews have awakened without anti-Semitism? Answer, certainly not. That is why the Creator urges us to fulfill our destiny by inciting hatred toward Israel. Question, what should little children of 2 or 3 years of age be taught first and foremost? Answer, at the age of 2 or 3, it is certainly too early to teach them anything. But you can try to teach them to be connected well with others. Question, how does the Creator respond to your teaching us? Do you feel his response? Answer, the Creator fully approves of me. He responds very well, and I feel this perfectly. I am not joking. You can do the same and discover it. Question, I am an artist. Please tell me, why are visual arts necessary and will they be important in the future? Answer, no, they are not very important and will not be important in the future. This is because people will discover an inner spiritual vision that cannot be expressed in any way but solely and only through our soul. Question, why should you care for others if you yourself need love? What I mean is, should I not care about myself first and foremost? Answer, in this case you will never be able to satisfy yourself and you will never feel love. If you are in need of love, you must love others. Then you will begin to feel love for you. From Cab TV's Answers to Questions from Facebook, March 10, 2019. New Life Number 1153. A Puzzle of Experiences.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about experiences in life. We'll try to understand how do the things we experience in life make us who we are. Be with us. It's going to be interesting. Yael, please. So first of all, what is an experience? It's a deep impression. A deep impression of something that you identify with, that inspires you. Something that made a strong imprint in a person. It says that an experience is always a kind of interaction between man and someone or something. And also, man, so it says, is the sum total of his experiences, that our experiences shape who we are. If, for example, we were shunned as children, then it might develop in us a sense of justice. If I succeeded in something in life, then it gives me a feeling that I can, that I'm able. If I'm heartbroken, then it can give me a feeling that I can overcome things, or to the contrary, that maybe it's better not to fall in love, and so on. Many experiences are also related to other people. A person who experienced a strong positive experience with another person will probably grow up to trust people. A person who experienced a very bad experience with another person will be very suspicious of other people in life, and it shapes who we are and how we behave. And I'd like to ask, how do experiences shape who we are? How does it work? It's very simple. We have a memory, what we call a reshimo in Hebrew, from the word roshem, impression. Every action, every place, every impression, every experience, it leaves an impression, and this impression enters our memory bank, and this is what we build our outlook of the world from. Whether it's positive or negative, what should we be afraid of, what should we be drawn to, it determines everything. Meaning, all in all, we act out of the impressions that we have from our experiences, and therefore, it's very important, especially in education, also in regard to children, to give them positive experiences and to distance them from negative experiences. There are people that say, no, but a person, he won't know how to deal with things. First of all, you have to give positive, good experiences. And the negative experiences, you should give only to the extent to which we know that this will help a child to keep and protect himself, to keep himself from dangerous things, for example, and so on. But all in all, our experiences in life, they all leave an impression, what we call reshimot, informative memories, and we live accordingly. I can't even discern later on, why do I think the way that I do? Why do I look at things or accept things the way that I do? But it all works on autopilot as a result of the experiences that I went through. The next question I'd like to ask is, to what extent is a person aware of what he experiences? Of his experiences in life, of the impression they left on him. First of all, a person is never aware of the experience that he is about to go through or experience. He thinks about it and more or less depicts it, plans his attitude towards it, his relation to it, according to his previous impressions, his previous experiences. He processes his previous impressions in formulas that he also learned from past experiences. And in short, who is man? Man is all in all. The sum total of what he went through in life, and of course, there is the basic character, basic approach, what he has left from his parents, his predecessors, and so on. But all in all, it's the experiences. To what extent can another person understand my experiences? According to his experiences, he can understand yours. Meaning that if there is something that he didn't experience, then he doesn't have the ability to understand what I'm going through. Right, he can only understand something from something. If you'll tell him, explain to him, depict to him your impression of something, then according to his impressions, he can imagine it. But later, when he himself will experience that same thing, he'll say, no, 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 this isn't what I meant, this isn't what I understood. Because really, no one can feel what you feel. It's impossible to pass experiences on to each other. Why? Because it's registered in a person and it's extremely related to a person's nature, to his character, to his DNA, to his everything. For example, in my work, I saw a movie according to a novel by Dickens. The same movie was filmed in Russia, Germany, England, and in the United States. You can't describe how different these things were, meaning they're completely different. I wouldn't think that it's about the same book, as if they all have the same basis, origin. And it left such an impression on me that will people ever be able to understand each other? It's a part of something that I had to do in connection with my doctorate. But that's how it is. And it's really a question, as if there's a bug in the system, where in advance, people don't have the same experiences. Secondly, everyone experiences things differently. So, there is a situation where my life is the sum total of my experiences, of the experiences that I had in life. This is how I act and respond to life. So how can another person understand me at all? How can we communicate on a deep and profound level then? Even if we want to, or suppose we have no prejudice, but if we write, for example, about the French Revolution with our own prejudice, then the Americans, the Germans, and the French themselves, you understand how differently they'll write about it. Obviously, so this is the question. Why is the system built this way to begin with, where the chances of there ever being some kind of qualitative communication between us isn't working, but we have to create some kind of a mutual foundation. We have to have some kind of a place, platform, common ground. Where is it? That's what I'm asking. It doesn't exist, but still, we're trying to reach it. Understanding that we won't find something ideal, but still, somehow, all the international agreements. Also, we can't examine ourselves to the extent to which we, as if, are talking about the same, but we always mean something else, because everyone has different experiences in life. My question is, why is it made that way? I don't mind countries, I'm talking on the human level. Because every person has a different basis than others, he's very different. He comes from a so-called Reshimo, a place in the general soul of Adam Rishon, which is the collective soul. No one came from the same place. Everyone was brought up in a special family, in a special time, with a special character. It's really like a sandwich where the different layers are laid on each other. Were we able to take a deeper look into ourselves, like an X-ray view? We'd see that we stand no chance of getting married, of doing something. It's a good thing that we don't know, that we have no deeper understanding of the matter, that we don't understand the extent to which we don't understand each other. Why is the system built this way? Why do we stand no chance of really profoundly understanding each other. In order to reach a divine experience of love covers all crimes, that we will know that on this level, in this realm, we can't understand each other because, to begin with, we have a different foundation, and therefore we can never truly, deeply understand each other. Because I can't depict life the way that you do in regard to everything, and you will never be able to understand or depict life the way I do either. So now the question is, what do we do? Before, what do? Why does it work this way? In order for us to rise above this problem, which is unsolvable, and that we will build some kind of common ground where all of us are equal and that we can connect there, that we disconnect from all of these experiences in life and all of our built-in data, and we reach a state where we connect to the upper force, in the upper force, in the upper force, in the force of bestowal. There we can be together and as one. For example, in a family, there is a husband, wife, many relatives, and so on, and finally, after so many years, their baby boy is born. They waited for him for so many years, and then he's born, and everyone looks at him. He's an angel, and they're none like him. So you understand the extent to which everyone's willing to connect for his sake, meaning that there has to be some kind of a really precious image, something that's really precious to us, that for his sake, in our inclination to do good to him, we can forget about all of our personal experiences and to experience the experience of loving him. And that we connect with one another in order to love him and benefit him. So specifically in this way, can we rise above our personal experiences? This was the parable? Yeah. And what's the moral? The moral is that this is how we have to transcend toward the upper force, the creator. The upper force or the creator being what? The force of love, the force of bestowal. A force for which I'm truly willing to transcend and benefit above my own ego. Where specifically by rising above my own ego, this way I can reach bestowal and reach the Creator. And why is it built this way? So that all of us will be able to connect to that one experience, being what? The recognition of the Creator, of the force of bestowal. He also said, love, the recognition of the Creator, of love for the Creator, the recognition of mutual bestowal, and then in him, we all connect together. So, just to summarize, you said a few moments ago that people will never be able to understand each other because every person consists of the sum total of the experiences that he experienced in life, and each of us had completely different experiences in life, and no one can understand the other. This I understand. And Yael is asking, why is it built, the system, why is it built this way that everyone has their own set of experiences and that none of us can really understand each other? And you said that it's made this way in order for us to reach this divine kind of experience. So what is that? Bestowal. What is bestowal? Bestowal is that which is outside of me. Where then all of the experiences that I experience are experiences that are outside of my body, outside of my ego, in giving, in love, that I experience them outside of my ego, outside of my will to receive, that I experience them in the other. If I do these kinds of exercises and I start feeling the other, I reach a state where I really feel these experiences in the other and not in me. And then these are experiences of the so-called third kind. And the experiences that I feel in the other person, not in myself, allow me to understand the other person because they're in them and not in me? Yes, because I disconnect from my own personal experiences, detach from them, and I live in the other and being clothed in the other. And this is the basis for some kind of a human understanding of each other. Now, I want to ask, we know that every person, suppose two people go to the same event, everyone experiences it differently. Different things will influence them. People's inner world is completely different, structure and so on. There are people that barely feel life, meaning barely any event does it for them, affects them. They're not impressed with anything. Yeah, life is kind of like flat, but they don't feel it that way. That's what you think. What then? Because they feel that they're alive, that their life is really even stormy. I gave this example once on one of our talks. I have this acquaintance in Canada. He's a lawyer. He lives in such a place where it's some village where you maybe have 1,000 people, maybe a bit more. And he says that once every few months he has to leave this entire pressure of this stormy life. And, you know, the only thing that you have there are bears. And then he takes, how do you call it? You use it on snow in winter. A sled. Yeah. A sled with, what do you call these animals? Deer. Yeah, usually it's deer. And a tour guide, and he goes away for 2 weeks to some place where there's no one and nothing, and then he rests from the stormy life that he thinks that he has among 1,000 people. So it's completely subjective. Yeah. And there are those, like my brother, for example, who lives in a place like Manhattan, but in Canada, in Toronto, in the real center, where there you can really explode from the noise and the tension in the air. And for him, that's life. Calm, ordinary. So, people are very different in this regard. Yeah. Okay. I see that every person in life has his share of experiences, and it's something completely personal. Why did I experience what I experienced? You had your experiences, she had hers. Is it random? Was it planned? It's because, nonetheless, each of us has to reach a special kind of attitude toward other people in order to complete our place in the general human mosaic, which is what the sum total of everyone's experiences, of all generations, of everything that anyone ever experienced. When we put all of these things together, complete each other, connecting with one another correctly, this will be called the end of correction. And then all of these experiences will become as one experience in which we will come to know the upper force that arranged all of this. So, this puzzle is really pre-planned. Yes. Where all in all, everyone gets a piece of that puzzle, and the sum total of everyone completes the sum total of all of the experiences that mankind has to go through. Now, so in this great big puzzle, there are no redundant experiences, because then it will be missing from the puzzle, of course. So nothing's redundant, nothing at all. So my next question is, why are there people that get more negative and some get more positive experiences in life? It depends on the place of the root of the soul in the general system called the soul of Adam. There is a system in which we exist. It's called Adam. And in this system, everyone has a place where they are like a small cell having to supplement, complete the entire system for it to function correctly. So if I have a, so to speak, bad place, I'll have many negative experiences. Negative, positive, this is something that we have to examine. What I'm asking is, why does some person get more negative experiences and someone else gets more positive experiences? It depends on what that person's role in the soul is. Some of the experiences that a person gets, that's called fate. Usually, we're talking about processes where we say that everything that happens has a special role in man's development and the development of mankind. What is the role of experiences? The role is for a person to learn how to correctly relate to his life, to his entire existence in life. And what is the role of positive experiences in this regard? A person who experiences positive experiences, how does that advance him in life? It probably pulls him forward. It's something very complicated. I don't know how to answer that. It's very complex. These are multifaceted things on many levels. Okay, so I want to ask about something that we talked about before. I understand that there is one general puzzle in which we have all of what? Who's in that puzzle? The souls from all generations, from everything. So the sum total of experiences exist in one puzzle. Each of us gets a piece of that puzzle. So first of all, my piece of puzzle is unique, and so is yours, and so on. And both the negative and positive experiences, they're all needed. Now, I want to ask, previously you said that the set of my experiences determine who I am, and your set determines who you are, and therefore we can't understand each other really, but it advances us towards a divine experience. So I understand that we all come from different pieces of the puzzle. What is a divine experience? Because it sounded kind of mystical, religious. Not at all. It's not mystical or anything. A divine experience is where we all connect with one another, all of us, and we feel the general system. What kind of experience is that? It's an experience in which I feel all the so-called souls, all of the parts that comprise this puzzle, and make it as one. I feel their experiences. We feel the sum total. The sum total of what? Of our connection, where we connect into a single body. Previously you said that in order to experience this divine experience, my attitude should be one of giving, of love, as if to experience something not out of my own private peace, but from someone else's peace. Why does this effort provide us with a divine experience? What's the connection? Because together isn't one. By connecting with one another, we don't feel the sum total, but we rise above our nature, above this world in which all of us feel things in a separate, contradicting way, into a different reality, world, so-called upper world, we're all interconnected, and then the experience is called the upper world, an eternal life, because we don't cut from each other, but we supplement each other. And then the entire system lives an eternal life, and this is how we experience it. And therefore, our entire life is in order to transcend above the corporeal experiences to a spiritual life. So corporeal experiences is where we feel everything separately, cut off from each other, each experiencing only his own piece of puzzle. And spiritual experiences, they're felt where? In the entirety of our connection. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. What an experience. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.